Hi everyone, welcome back to the HR Leaders Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Tara Malzi, who's a Global Head of Sustainability Learning and Education at JLL. During the episode, she shares why sustainability is important to our workforce and workplace, how to decide where to begin on your ESG journey, and how JLL are fostering learning, inclusion, and belonging in the metaverse. As always, before we jump into the video, make sure you hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell, and follow on your favorite podcast platform. That being said, let's jump in. Tara, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Chris. I'm wonderful.
Where are you joining us from today?
I am actually in Cologne, Germany today.
Nice.
My first time here. I think this is what's behind me.
Yeah.
Your listeners will know better than I am.
Yeah, everyone's going to think you're turning into like a cat lady or something.
I was trying to position it. Not sure I succeeded. If I keep myself positioned exactly here, I might be the perfect cat lady for this show.
It'd be amazing. So people probably are hearing your accent right now and they're like, how did you end up in Germany?
Well, yeah, and especially I don't live in Germany. I live in France, so I'm in a hotel right now.
Yeah.
And I've lived in Paris for the past 19 years, but originally I am from California. And I love it when I go back to the US and people still think I'm an American. I've had situations where they question my accent. I think I speak Globish now. I get worried that I no longer speak any language fluently, but I think it's okay for this podcast.
Yeah. Do you speak French?
I do speak French.
You're pretty good now, I'm assuming, after being there that long.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I did my master's in France. And
oh, okay.
I've been working quite a few years now, but it can still improve. You know, it's a daily battle.
Yeah, a daily battle. What would you say kept you so long? Like, and you know, that's a long
love.
Time. Oh,
yeah,
love got you.
Got married.
French man?
A French man. So we've been married 19 years.
Amazing. Tell everyone a little bit more about you in terms of your journey to the new role you're in now, which is really exciting and one that I don't come across often.
Yeah, well, so my current role is in education. And actually, I didn't start in education, but I think it's always been a passion. And probably because I myself got really lucky in my own education. I was thinking back and I can remember, I don't know about you, Chris, I can remember my kindergarten teacher. I can remember like every teacher from kindergarten to high school, I think their first name, last name, and you know, what the classroom looked like. So it had a big impact on me when I was growing up. And it's all like teaching has always been a kind of side hustle for me. I started teaching when I was in college as a way of making some money. And I found myself teaching some MBA students international politics and American history when I was in Paris.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was a fun side gig and I really enjoyed it. So it's always been, you know, somewhere in the background, I wanted to get into education, but it's been a long journey and kind of an unusual journey probably to get to where I am today.
Yeah, definitely. So you've held like, tell everyone some of the roles you've held before, because your new role, Global Head of Sustainability, Learning and Education, we'll jump into that a bit more. But before that, what other roles have you held?
All right. So let me maybe preface that by saying that the career path has been fueled by, I'd say maybe radical curiosity. So mm-hmm. I suffer from a form of being extremely curious and maybe a misguided belief that I am at my best when I have no idea what I'm doing. So kind of going into a role where I'm going to be really stretched. So I've been, I started out doing SME and microfinancing in Africa. Looking at how you can support entrepreneurs through better financing, better financial intermediation. And from there, went into executive recruitment in Africa. So I created a practice for headhunting chief engineers of mm-hmm. desalination plants, heads of private equity funds in Africa. So that was really quite exciting.
Yeah.
And from there, I made a move into learning and education. Where I joined, one of my former clients was at the World Bank and he had joined this company called Mazar mm-hmm. and he was the new recruiter there. So called me up and got my first job in learning at Mazar. And it was quite an interesting conversation, that recruitment conversation, because I had absolutely no relevant experience in education to speak of. And I mean, you can get away with it in recruitment. You can come into recruitment.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Area,
yeah.
Right. But this was a position of responsibility. It was to manage the university. I had no experience and I was 3 months pregnant. And it was instant connection with the boss, Laurent Chouin, who said during the interview, and this is a lesson that I will never forget, he said, my job is to make you more employable when you leave. So, you know, with that kind of selling premise and promise of development, there's no way you can say no to that. So
I'm going to steal that one. Yeah. That's a good one. Amazing. So you were, before you left, you were the chief learning officer there.
Yeah. Right. So I became the chief learning officer. We got our university accredited. That was the other thing. First day on the job, he said, look, I invited the accreditation team from this organization called EFMD, Equus. Mm-hmm. It accredits all of the major business schools. I invited them in before you came to see if we were eligible to be an accredited corporate university. The answer was no. Here's why. Get the accreditation in the next 2 years. So that was my that was my job.
No small feat then, considering especially how you're learning to be a mum. Exactly. It's just a small thing at the same time. So how do you describe your current role to people, your role and responsibility? Because it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, when I joined JLL at the height of right before lockdown, so in 2020, have gone through several iterations of different jobs, yeah, actually at JLL as well, which may kind of explain like my circuitous path into where I am today, which is sustainability. I did a head of talent role for the region of EMEA, and then I was the global head of well-being and employee engagement. And so this actually sits very squarely in the S of ESG. So now I've moved over to sustainability, and this role is about really fundamentally transforming 100,000 people to do their jobs differently. And it's because sustainability, so the E, environment, the S, the social, and the corporate governance piece is changing in a major way across real estate. And this means that everyone's job is deeply affected. And so it's a real challenge. It's kind of the purpose of our company, of JLL, is to shape real estate for a better world. So it's also, you know, firmly embedded in what the CEO wants JLL's place in the industry to be, a leader in how we can use tech and sustainability to really transform the way we think about the built environment and the way we use it. Mm-hmm. This is where people work, play, and live. And so it's really important to make sure it's a sustainable way.
Yeah. Like one of the things that I learned in last time we spoke, you was telling me about how real estate impacts society and the communities around us. And I didn't really realize that until we spoke. Could you share a bit more about that you shared with me last time we spoke, which was really interesting.
Yeah. So let's see where your recall is, Chris. So in terms of carbon emissions, you know, when you talk about environment, one of the things is which industries are the biggest polluters in terms of carbon emissions. So do you remember what the built environment is responsible for?
You said it was like number one. That's all I remember, right?
It's 40%. It's higher than transportation.
Yeah.
So like the built environment is a big emitter of carbon, of GHG gases, greenhouse gases. And so then that covers like how you construct a building. And also actually the even bigger portion of that pie is how you operate a building. So all of the electricity and the whatever type of energy that you're using to actually run your buildings. And it's not surprising because as humans today in the developed world, we spend 90% of our time inside. So like for both of those reasons, this is where we live. This is where we work and play. This is what is having the biggest impact on climate today. We can have a huge role in changing the way that we operate the building, the way we sell the building, the way we inhabit the building, all of the practices around that building we can change. And also, I think the last time we spoke, Chris, I talked about the social value of a building, yeah, right? Like, we used to think of it as an inert object that sat there and that we could go in and out of. But actually, this is something that delivers value to the community or not. So how that it fits into the social fabric and the community fabric is really important. And you can actually control that. So we can have an impact on that as well.
Yeah. I can only imagine that, like, if you ask an average person, what's the number one? you said 40%, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's after that? What's the closest?
I need to get out my pie chart, but people typically think it's transportation.
Yeah, I would have guessed that.
Or heavy industry. Yeah, I meant to have my pie chart out.
That's all right. I wouldn't even have come to real estate at all. It wouldn't even have been 10 in my top 10. I just don't think people maybe think about it that way.
And I think that like what's complicated is, two problems we have in this upskilling adventure. The first one is that we don't actually have all the answers, right? So whilst we know that carbon emissions is a problem, we actually don't know how everybody in our organization should now do their jobs in order to make an impact. Mm-hmm. So one of the issues that we've come across is, okay, how are we going to get those solutions? Well, actually, we've got to give them a base level knowledge, let them experiment and practice, let them come back and tell us what's working and what's not. So it's kind of an iterative learning process. We know there's a problem. We know people have to change. We don't know where we're going. So we've got the end goal, but we don't know actually what the path is to get there. Mm-hmm.
Could you share with the audience some examples, some of the things that you're doing to make a difference in the way that's reshaping the way that you work?
Yeah. Well, I think the one that's kind of the most tangible for everyone is how we build and construct buildings. So first, let's think about the example of a new development. So because we do both new developments and we'll do retrofits and refurbishments. So a new development, what are the materials that you're going to be using, right? So are you going to be using concrete? Are you going to be reusing recycled concrete? What is the carbon impact based on what types of materials you're choosing to use? Secondly, how are you going to design it to have the least amount of impact? So for example, the way in which you're going to position your windows, you know, are you going to capture the sun because
that's
you're in a
country, yeah, and reconvert right, that
with, mm-hmm. with low sunlight, so you want like maximum exposure, like in the Nordic countries, or to the contrary, are you in Arizona where you really need shade? So how are you going to position your windows? What type of windows are you going to create? Do you need triple insulation on those windows? Do you need photovoltaic films on those windows to capture like the sunlight? Are you going to put PV photovoltaic, like solar panels on the roof? For the Empire State Building, when we were looking at how can we turn that into a completely green building, one of the things that we had to do is replace over 5,000 windows. And then we looked at that elevator shaft, you know, where you have kinetic energy being created all the time with elevators going up and down. And we said, okay, well, how can we capture that energy in order to reuse it in the building? So we now capture energy from the shaft to reuse across the building. So I think that's the type of thing, but we don't have all the answers. There's new solutions every day. You know, one of the things that we don't think about all the time is carpet. And now there's recycled carpet. So there's a big thing around like circular economy. Can we reuse, not just recycle, but take materials and turn them into something new? We have countertops now that we use that are made out of yogurt pots.
You said you can see like the logos of like different yogurts.
So exactly. You go into our London offices and you can look at the countertops and you might see the little Danone or Nestle logo that's embedded into the countertop.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be really, the reason I was excited to have you on the show, because all of the, well, not all of them, but a lot of the leaders that are listening to the show are all going through this transformation of reinventing work and their workspaces right now. So this is really important for them to keep this in mind. But from the work that you've done internally, what impact has that had on your own employees? You know, walking into an environment in that way, something I'm sure they're proud of.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, first of all, we're at JLO, we're trying to walk the walk, right? So we've set ourselves extremely ambitious sustainability goals. We talk about them in terms of on the carbon side, by when do you want to be net zero? And net zero means you're hardly offsetting at all. So you've actually reduced or replaced your greenhouse gases with non-polluting energy usage. So our goal is to be net zero by 2040. It doesn't just mean for ourselves. It also means that all of our suppliers, upstream suppliers, and also all of our clients, because actually within our scope, we have to ensure that our clients, because we manage property, like the facilities management on behalf of other companies, actually falls within our greenhouse gas emissions. So our job is not only to like make ourselves perfectly net zero, but also help our clients along their journey because they count for us. So, and also, I mean, that's the only way that we get to actually a win for the planet.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
So it's been, I mean, we've done a lot of work internally around what the new workplace looks like. And what's cool is that it's often, you know, the two issues that are on an HR's mind right now are return to work, number one, and all of the questions around that. What does my new flex policy look like? What does that mean for diversity and inclusion? What does that mean for retention? What does that mean for visibility of people? What does that mean for sense of belonging? So actually all of those return to work questions are very much integrated into, well, what does your workplace look like? And so I think the cool thing about what we do at JLL and the other part of my job that I think is very interesting is being our own guinea pig to test out all of those future work prototypes. Mm-hmm. So for example, how can you build a workplace that attracts people and pulls people back? And what do you have to use the workplace for? Are you using it for collaboration? Are you using it for ideation? Are you using it for client meetings? Are you using it for reflection and quiet time because you've got a baby at home? So, you know, what are the things that you need to get out of the workplace and all of the different types of people across your organization need to get out of the workplace, which is, you know, where you bring in D&I as well, you know, your considerations about.
It must be interesting because you're seeing it from so many perspectives from all your clients of what they're
and
doing.
And it looks really different. I mean, I'm sure you've had on your podcast people that have companies that have said, we're coming back to work 100% of the time.
Yeah.
It's really important for us and our sense of belonging, the way our business works, that people are in the office all the time. And others that have said, we're moving to totally virtual and we've actually decided to give up our leases. Right. So you've got that very large span of and anything goes in between. And so like how you then, because we've got a part of our business that does workplace design. And so how you think about how do you look at what your company culture wants to be, align that to what your physical infrastructure looks like, and then work on the culture, because, you know, we've got tons of examples of you build a gym, but no one comes. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the culture. The culture is I don't work out at work. I work at work. So if you have the gym, it's really nice. It's a signal. But unless you have the management culture that is helping you,
no one's going to be in there. So you should be at work. Why are you in the gym? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely. Maybe it's just me, but I had this maybe it's a misconception that it's more expensive to do these things to become carbon neutral. It's going to cost a lot of money to have recycled carpet, recycled desks. Is that a myth?
It's somewhere between myth and reality. I'd say it really depends on what you're doing. I think we all have this notion that it's a huge expense in addition to what you're currently doing.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is there's a lot of low cost, no cost measures that you can take. Actually, the circular economy and those types of materials are rarely more expensive. And if they are, it's marginal more expensive. However, so you've got like the low cost, no cost, and then you have some real structural things that are going to be high cost. However, you have to look at the long term. So, you know, we work with like investors and we work with occupiers, tenants. And on the investor side, you're looking at, okay, well, how do I enable my building to be future proof? And if we've done research at JLL about all of the cities around the world and the commitments that those cities themselves are taking to net zero. And when they take a commitment, they basically say, well, by 2026, your building has to reach this level of energy efficiency. And if it's a commercial building and it's not there, well, guess what? You can't lease it out.
Oh, wow.
So, you know,
so what's the opportunity cost?
That's a problem. Right?
Yeah. So you kind of look at the longer term cost
Exactly. So it's more about like, how can you make marginal increases now, or what can you, you're going to do this, but what can you swap out so that you're not just ready for now to be in line with like the regulations now, but you're actually getting ready for the 2026 deadline. So yeah, that's what we're seeing a lot of.
So I'm guessing like the way in which you and the team or all companies sell real estate must have massively changed. Like these, I'm sure these things we're talking about weren't even part of the conversation not too long ago.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, what's astonishing is actually companies are moving faster than legislation. So what we're seeing now is that it's not just that the city has made this declaration that they want to be net zero, but actually the companies. So investors are saying it. You've got your BlackRocks, you've got your Allianz, you've got your Brookfields, you've got your Access. They're saying, look, guys, we're making a commitment that our real estate portfolio is going to be entirely net zero by 2050. Before any other, you know, legislation has demanded it of them. You've got like, you know, Amazon who said, okay, we're making a climate pledge. And all of the companies that agree with us and also want to make this pledge to better the climate, to reduce water, to reduce waste, to reduce energy uses, join forces with us. But then you're being held to account by your peers. So it's both, you know, there's an element of corporates taking the lead here. And as more and more corporates, and then there's a bit of a delay, Chris, because you've got, and this is what we see quite a lot. So you've got the corporates, the C-level, who go to the WEF, COP27 last week, right? So they've made this commitment. And then there's the operational people who are sitting here. And by the, it takes some time for that level of the organization to understand what that commitment now means. Oh, my real estate portfolio. Well, actually, you know, as an investor, I have to do an audit of my portfolio to understand, you know, where they sit. Am I at risk that they're not going to be compliant? Do I need to make some structural changes to this building? What kind of like capital expenditure do I need to put into it? And the corporates on the facilities management side are going, okay, well, what does that mean for my office space? And what kind of lease agreement do I have with the landlord to ensure that I'm getting the right energy mix, the renewable energies, for example? Because oftentimes, you know, if you lease an office building, you're not responsible if you're mm-hmm. getting renewable energy or if you're getting energy from the grid.
When should HR enter the conversation then? When do you think HR should be involved? Because normally, and sometimes, unfortunately, they're one of the last to know. It's like all of a sudden, like, oh, we need you to do this. They're like, oh, great. You see, you haven't even involved us in the entire conversation and what this really means to our employees, our culture, et cetera. When do you think HR should be involved?
Well, I think there's two places for HR. There's many, many places for HR. But for me, there's really two places for HR. The first one is that workplace is now, it used to be a CFO question. It's now more and more an HR question because your workplace is the physical embodiment of your company culture. It's how your company is going to work, right? So HRs are getting more and more in the room when it comes to making decisions about what type of workplace, what's the mix between at home versus at work. And that's where you have a maximum leverage to look at what is the actual footprint of your corporate offices around the world and what can you do to make that zero. Right. So, and it's not just zero around carbon, but it's also around what can we do about plastic? What can we do about waste? What can we do about water? So they're in a driver's seat when it comes to workplace decisions. And I'm saying, and the nice thing about it is that it's oftentimes like, you know, you need more greenery, but greenery is also, you know, your green walls, your biophilia. This is, you know, my new favorite word, biophilia.
Biophilia, I love it.
The greenery that you put around the office. So if you, biophilia actually serves a purpose of improving employee performance. So there's a lot of things, better air quality, better lighting.
What was the air quality quote? You told me the sort of the air quality tip.
Yeah.
You remember what I'm referring to?
Yeah. We did some research with Harvard and it turns out that the quality of the air, and they did a number of, you know, what's the percentage of carbon dioxide? What kind mm-hmm. of pollutants do you have in the air? As the quality of air goes down, so does your cognitive performance on key executive functions like decision-making. So air quality for HR should be top of their list. In fact, we've done some research about how your building can actually influence not just talent attraction, talent retention, client attraction and retention, but it's now a regenerative building can improve employee performance. And that's huge. So I think for an HR, you can absolutely combine your environmental targets with your social targets. Sometimes there's a trade-off, right? Like if you're going to have great amenities, that increases how much energy you use. Like you've got the gym, you've got the kitchen, you've got the rooftop terrace that you haven't covered with solar panels because you want to have, you know, nice aperitifs up there, right? There are instances, Chris, where there's a balance. But as an HR, I mean, you absolutely should be in that room having that conversation and thinking that through with usually the CFO.
Yeah.
So that's one. And the other one I think is around training and upskilling. And on that piece, I think that, you know, HRs have to come to the realization that not everyone's going to be a climate warrior, then that's okay. Like, but how then do we get people to change their behavior if they're not? And what I've learned in doing this job, and actually also in my past job, is that sustainability is one of those things that has long been seen as like a compliance issue, right? And not everyone responds well to compliance.
No, it's like, exactly. Whenever you think compliance, you're like, oh.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like, what's the motivation lever of your company? So in my last company, I was at Kering, which is, you know, a luxury group. Mm-hmm. And we had lots of incredible brands. And the byline of Kering is empower imagination. And, you know, you have Gucci, you have Yves Saint Laurent, you have Alexander McQueen. And we had a very, very visionary CEO who back in 2012 said, we have to revolutionize the fashion industry because it's such a big polluter worldwide. And not just in carbon emissions, but we're talking about dyes and metals. And, you know, so how can we clean up the fashion industry? And so he brought in a team. And at first it was all about rules and regulations. So they would go to the brands and say, okay, we've done this review. You can use this cashmere. In fact, they brought in Stella McCartney as kind of the brand to show the way, right? Like, how can you do vegan fashion? Like, what can you replace leather with? How can you replace fur? And it started with kind of the group coming down and saying, well, you can use this, you can't use this. You can do that, you can't do that. So, and what do you think our designers thought of that?
Yeah, as opposed to the why, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so that continued for about 4 years. And till there's this, they made one change to the name of the organization and they brought in sustainable innovation.
Oh, here we go. Innovation. And then the designers are all inspired.
Yes. Yeah. Because that's the entry point for these brands. They're creatives.
Yeah.
They love new. They love design. They love invention. So give them the opportunity to create their own solutions to this problem. They recognize that there's a problem. They just don't want to be told how to. So that's an example of how you have to think about, like, okay, we're not all climate warriors from the start, but can we align incentives so that we get people engaged? And I think, you know, what we've done is our company today is a transactional company. They're interested in deals. You know, they advise on buying, selling, leasing. It's a fast moving, fast paced deal making company. Great. Well, how can we align how you're selling, how you're talking to clients, because they always need to have the next kind of interesting topic to share with clients, with sustainability. And that's been extremely successful. And then the other thing that we learned, Chris, is you got to invert the pyramid of, we always think like start with the bottom, like the foundations, and work your way up. And, you know, it's really the opposite. Give them in only what they need to know to their specific role. And then they get interested and they work their way down. And, you know, what we've put in place, which has been really helpful, is if we design the stuff at the top, like what's really important for your role, and we give them resources so that they can go and self-serve. And when they get interested, they've got what they've need. We've partnered with a lot of organizations to build that out. So one of them is AXA Climate School, which has been pretty interesting because they've built out everything that businesses need to know around biodiversity, climate, carbon, how to think about it, and how it affects, you know, the jobs of like the support functions, HR or finance or supply chain, procurement. So it's been pretty interesting to try and just, you know, switch things around. Don't start at the bottom, start at the top.
Yeah, sometimes otherwise you're also just overwhelming them with information and you're like, what does this mean for Chris? You know, exactly. Start there. Start there if you want my attention. You mentioned last time we spoke about the metaverse that you built.
Yeah.
How does this fit in to what you're doing? Or does it?
Well, I mean, my whole approach to learning is how can you make it surprising? Like, how can you create kind of a moment of wow, a moment of delight? Because, and especially post-COVID, where we were all, you know, in lockdown, we had so much on the screen and we're still using the screen. So how can you make it new and exciting? So my, the other thing that was kind of the context for this was we were recruiting a new, we were developing a new early career program for graduates. And we had 100 graduates from 17 different nations going from Australia to the Middle East to California. So how do you create a global campus with zero impact on the environment or low impact on the environment and a sense of community? So we built out this metaverse campus and we haven't gone 3D yet. So we don't yet have the glasses, but that could come next. But we've developed this really cool and super easy. We did it in 6 weeks. So this was like a sprint to create a place where you have an auditorium, you've got breakout rooms, you've got your avatar. The whole place is built on our sustainability commitments. So you've got this amazing forest with that kind of represents the ecosystem. You've got mountains, you've got forests, you've got lakes, you've got this Zen garden area that's all about healthy spaces. So how do you ensure that you're looking at that S? And then we have the coolest part, I think, is the inclusive neighborhood. So how that social impact of like how do you generate value for the neighborhood? And there we've got actually all of the iconic buildings that we've worked on from a sustainability perspective. So you've got the Empire State Building, you've got the Edge in Amsterdam, you've got different like cool spots.
That's really cool. Sort of. I think it's cool on so many fronts. Like one, you kind of visually bringing it to life for people in that way and creating those spaces. Two, regardless of your culture and where you are based in the world, you kind of connect. It's kind of like a glue, right, to those new graduates coming in, all in that one space, and they can see it. It's just really, really interesting. And then can they like go into those different spaces and connect in video calls in those different areas?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the whole point of it is you go in. So in Zoom, you know, we're all together and then we break out.
Yeah.
Oftentimes you don't have the control of who you're breaking out with and you're brought back in. So the whole point of the metaverse is you have choice. You're fully immersed.
You can go where you want to go.
You have choice. Mm-hmm. So as your avatar walks up to Chris, so the Tyra and Chris avatar walk up together, actually our videos will fade in so that we can see each other, we can hear each other, and then the video fades out. It's like you're at a conference. And
that's
then I can
cool.
say, oh, hey, Chris, let's go over to that private spot over there. We have a picnic blanket in the forest, for example. Let's have a chat. So all of a sudden now I can move myself from, it's like, you know, space in real life. I can move myself from the group. I can come back. So it's been really engaging. I've shared it with a couple of colleagues and actually that's kind of our next frontier, Chris, is a lot of our clients have come to us and said, we need help, you know, like facilities management. We need content. Can you help us train up our facilities managers? Investors have come to us. So we've now started to develop this out. And I think this learning campus is going to be one of the places that is going to.
Yeah. You just have a space for your clients, space for their clients. And then you can, it's never ending. The possibilities are endless, right? In those type of worlds and environments. What platform did you create it on?
We created it on Gathertown.
Gathertown.
And we had these guys called Space Makers.
That is a job title I want. Chief space making officer.
So Gathertown is the platform, and then they recommended like a list of designers who could help you build out the space. So this small startup team in Czech Republic, they're amazing.
Nice.
They've got so many great ideas, and then you can create games. So you know, they've created racetracks for some clients. For us, that we developed out an escape game. So it's
like an escape room type thing. Yeah, exactly. Nice. That's so cool. Yeah, I love it. Love it. And yeah, and just so accessible. Cool thing, go on.
The other cool thing is that, like, if you have a team that works kind of across the planet, you can use this. And that's one of the use cases that Gather showed us as your office. In fact, Gather uses it as their office. And what's neat is when I go into the space now, sometimes I'll meet colleagues there. We haven't yet opened it up like that yet, but it's really fun because all of a sudden you have serendipity again, which is what's missing.
Yeah. It's like a virtual water cooler moment, right? Literally. Like.
Yes.
Have you, it would be cool to get to the point where it's integrated into the physical workspace. So like someone can be in the office and you can see virtually in the metaverse who's in and who's not, but you can then connect with that person through that room, right? In the office.
Yeah, well that you get a list of everybody who's in your metaverse. So you can actually see. Okay, who's here today.
Ah, nice. So you can see that. So you can already do that.
Right. So you don't have to like wander room to room to see who's there.
Yeah.
You can, and then you can just, you know, either text them or you can place like a geolocalizer on them and your avatar will lead you through rooms automatically to where that person is.
Yeah. It's some virtual stalking going on now. I can see you. I know where you are. Oh, it's so cool.
And I think we were talking about this last time, Chris, like the real value of learning is often in the connections that people build in those moments.
Yes, you did say that was such a good takeaway. Yeah.
Rather than the what, it's the who and the building deeper trust across your organization. And, you know, Zoom is good for that, but it's hard to give people, you're doing a seminar for 40 people, you do a breakout room. It's hard to create those moments of, you know, two on two and walking around the room and who do I want to talk to? And that's what this metaverse does. So it brings that back as a possibility.
And that sense of belonging, right? That it's like they belong to this is my community. These are my people. Yeah. It's so cool. Well, listen, before I let you go, what are you most excited about moving forward?
I mean, frankly, what I'm most excited about right now is seeing the impact that this training has had. You know, oftentimes when you're doing like leadership training or management training, it's really challenging for learning and development professionals to really kind of measure that impact. And because this is so much about client facing and about how to have new conversations, we've just done a survey 6 months later about what impact has this had, the training, how have you integrated it or not into how you talk to clients, how you win new business, how you're doing your job differently. And it's unbelievable. I've never had so much. It's like 87% of people who said, I've talked to my clients about this now. We had like 75% that said, I've won new business thanks to this. That's a real change. That's a step change, right? And it means that like we can't get to our goals without the clients. The clients we have to work together. And then, you know, landlords and tenants actually have to work together in order to meet goals. And so like if we like training people up to actually be able to have those conversations and to deliver results on this is so rewarding. So I'm actually, my boss was looking, and we set this crazy goal. We said 60,000 people would go through the training this year without it being mandatory. So we're not putting it in the compliance box. I said, don't put it there. Please
don't do it. You've ruined it already. We've already lost if you put it there. Yeah.
And definitely don't have like HR send this out as like a complaint. Don't do that. So we've done it via word of mouth. We're halfway there. He's still really pushing for us to go the full way in the last 6 weeks. And I actually kind of feel that we're getting the momentum to get us there, which would be, you know, 60% of the organization without resulting to mandatory have to do this type of action. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool.
Very exciting. That's already, my last question was going to be, what advice would you give to HR leaders? Because many of them are new on this journey. You already gave a great piece of advice. Don't make it compliance. Communicate it effectively. What other advice would you give to the HR leaders listening that are on this journey?
Yeah, I would say one thing, get in that conversation about your workplace. And it's not so, because you got to think about your culture, your company culture, your management style, and how that fits with what you physically are providing to employees and how that attracts them, how that retains them, how that engages them, the type of work they're doing. So I would say like number, and that's so interesting. That's like a, it's probably, and it'll stretch them because we're, most HR are not part of the CRE, the corporate real estate team, right? So it's a really interesting area of growth and really important, I think, to, you know, what your job is as an HR. And the second thing I would say is, you know, on the learning and development side, figure out what that entry point could be for you. It's different for every company. And yeah, figure out that that piece, and that probably they have, because it's not only for sustainability. It's all, yeah, that also goes for leadership training, yeah, and management training. Like, what makes them tick? And then, and remember that learning is definitely, you know, that that formalized learning is obviously 10% of the battle. The real battle is what happens after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love it. Well, listen, thanks so much. I'm so excited to have you on the show. It's a topic that we don't talk about enough, to be honest. And I'm sure we're going to see many more roles. Like, I think you're probably the only global head of sustainability, learning and education that I've had on the show so far. Hopefully we have many more. but really excited for you, really happy for you and the team. I can see by your smile how much you love your work that you do. And I appreciate you coming on the show to share your journey so far.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for the opportunity. And I'm a big fan of what you've built here, and especially as an entrepreneur yourself, having created this from scratch. It's really a pleasure to be with you and having shared this moment with you. So thank you.
No worries. Well, enjoy the rest of your trip and I'll see you again soon. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Bye.